Before dawn, the Caribbean Sea looks deceptively calm. The water lies in a sheet of blue-black glass, disturbed only by distant wave patterns rolling toward the Venezuelan coast. But beneath this vast, quiet surface, power is gathering. A U.S. aircraft carrier strike group, complete with destroyers, cruisers, submarines, and surveillance aircraft, has entered the region under Operation Southern Spear. Its arrival sends an immediate, invisible vibration across the hemisphere. Fishermen in Grenada hear the rumble of engines they cannot see. Air traffic controllers in Trinidad note unusual flight corridors. Marine trackers in Barbados watch new icons appear on their screens. Across the Caribbean, governments begin drafting statements. Some express caution, others quiet concern, others complete silence. They know the history. Whenever great powers shift their weight, small islands feel the tremor first. And this time, the movement isn't abstract. It's a carrier, a floating city of steel, sitting at the doorstep of a politically unstable neighbor. A familiar anxiety returns. The Caribbean is once again becoming a stage for someone else's tension. Chapter 1: The Return of Big Navies. Before the carrier strike group ever appeared on radar, the first clues emerged in the form of sudden, unexplained changes in maritime chatter. In early morning hours, long before Caribbean media sensed a story, the encrypted communications between U.S. naval assets in the Western Atlantic shifted to higher tempo. Pings grew more frequent. Airborne early warning aircraft traced repetitive loops. Deepwater sonar net traffic increased. To the analysts observing from small island states, places like Curaçao, Antigua, and Barbados, this was the unmistakable rhythm of a major fleet on the move. The Caribbean Sea, ringed by islands and continental coasts, has always been a corridor of strategic value. But when the United States deploys an aircraft carrier into the basin, the equilibrium changes instantly. Aircraft carriers are not symbolic. They are declarations. They project reach, authority, and deterrence. They signal that something serious is unfolding. The arrival. The carrier strike group's entry into regional waters was deliberate, slow enough to avoid alarm, but decisive enough that no state could dismiss it. Satellite imagery captured the moment, the silhouette of a nuclear-powered carrier cutting across cobalt water, flanked by guided missile destroyers that maneuvered like bodyguards. Beneath that surface, invisible but present, submarines accompanied the flotilla, tracing silent arcs through deeper trenches. Operation Southern Spear had begun. The U.S. publicly framed the operation as a stabilization initiative, focused on safeguarding maritime routes, countering narcotics, and maintaining regional security coherence. But behind the language lay a sharper edge: Venezuela's deepening political crisis and escalating rhetoric in its territorial dispute with Guyana. The situation along the Venezuelan-Guyana border had worsened in recent months, driven by claims over oil-rich land and maritime areas. Tensions spread outward, touching every nation connected to the Caribbean basin's economic arteries. When the carrier arrived, it acted as a floating reminder that unresolved tensions on the mainland could spill into the sea. Historic shadows. This wasn't the first time the region felt a powerful navy reshape its sense of stability. In 1962, during the Cuban Missile Crisis, the United States imposed a naval ring around Cuba, an act that sealed the Caribbean's fate as a geopolitical choke point. Memories of that moment remain embedded in regional consciousness. The idea that the Caribbean, for all its cultural richness and political diversity, exists in a neighborhood where global powers often settle their disputes. Villagers along Jamaica's southeastern coast still tell stories of seeing foreign ships on the horizon during that crisis. Cuban elders remember the eerie silence before the U.S. blockade tightened. Trinidadian fishermen recount tales passed down from grandfathers who felt the tension in the water itself. Now, decades later, the feeling returned, different in details, but identical in tone. The presence of a carrier did not mean conflict was imminent, but it did mean the region was no longer invisible. The Caribbean Sea had again become a contested space, where power projection was measured in nautical miles. Operation Southern Spear's early signals. The early aims of Southern Spear remained partly opaque, but certain patterns were clear. Airborne surveillance aircraft created a continuous arc of coverage between Puerto Rico, Curaçao, and the northern edge of South America. Maritime patrol planes from U.S. bases in Florida expanded their flight paths, dipping closer to Venezuelan and Colombian coastlines. Radar signatures of destroyers appeared near key shipping lanes, routes critical to Caribbean import economies. Communications intercepts suggested heightened monitoring of illegal trafficking routes traditionally used by narcotics groups. But outside official statements, analysts pieced together a more complex picture. Southern Spear represented a widening of U.S. hemispheric posture, a tightening of the regional net, and a response to Venezuelan maneuvering near Guyana's offshore drilling zones. Even as the operation unfolded, nobody could ignore the elephant in the room. An aircraft carrier does not deploy solely for narcotics control. It arrives when deterrence is required. Shockwaves in CARICOM capitals. In Bridgetown, the Barbados Foreign Ministry held an emergency briefing. Officials reviewed maps showing the predicted route of the U.S. strike group and its implications for commercial shipping. Barbados, like many Caribbean states, depends heavily on predictable sea corridors. A shift in naval presence, even a non-hostile one, can alter fuel prices, cargo arrival schedules, and port logistics. In Port of Spain, Trinidad and Tobago's ministers discussed regional stability. Their proximity to Venezuela made them uniquely sensitive to sudden military activity. Trinidad had long maintained delicate diplomatic ties with Caracas, sometimes tense, sometimes cordial, always important. A carrier strike group just offshore complicated that balance. In Kingston, Jamaican officials monitored the situation with careful neutrality. Jamaica, though farther from Venezuela, understood the regional implications of heightened U.S. attention. Fluctuations in great power tension inevitably reverberated in tourism forecasts, visa policies, fuel costs, and trade dynamics. In Georgetown, Guyana's government reacted with a mix of relief and anxiety. Relief, because the presence of a U.S. carrier signaled strong support for Guyana's sovereignty amid escalating threats from Venezuela. Anxiety, because any military escalation, even defensive, risked transforming their nation into a front line. A region listening to the water. Fishermen in the Grenadines reported unusual patterns. Wakes that appeared in places where no visible ship had passed, the kind caused by fast-moving vessels operating without lights. Marine traffic observers in the Dominican Republic noticed increased activity in the Mona Passage, the narrow corridor between Hispaniola and Puerto Rico, a strategic funnel where naval forces often reposition. Airport radar screens across the region displayed more high-altitude aircraft flying tightly controlled routes, often with transponders set to restricted modes. The Caribbean is a place where people notice subtle changes. The sea is not just water. It is a source of life, livelihood, and cultural identity. So when the rhythms shift, communities feel it even before governments issue statements. The shipping disruption. As the carrier moved closer to Venezuelan waters, ripple effects touched regional trade. Caribbean economies depend on stable shipping corridors. Everything from rice to fuel arrives by sea. With new warship routes overlapping commercial lanes, shipping companies began adjusting course lines to avoid potential interception zones. Container ships leaving Panama altered their trajectories before entering the Caribbean's eastern arc. Bulk carriers from Brazil slowed operations to avoid sailing near surveillance zones monitored by U.S. aircraft. Fuel tankers bound for Haiti, the Bahamas, and the Cayman Islands filed new route declarations, increasing delivery times. These changes were subtle but significant. In small island economies, even minor disruptions create pressure. A two-day delay in fuel can strain power generation systems. A diverted cargo shipment can raise consumer prices overnight. Echoes of a changing hemisphere. The carrier's arrival marked more than a military movement. It symbolized a shifting geopolitical landscape. Venezuela's internal crisis, contested elections, economic collapse, and ongoing Guyana dispute had drawn renewed international scrutiny. For the United States, the situation demanded attention from a national security perspective. And when Washington focuses on a regional issue, the entire Caribbean feels the pull. In many ways, the region stood at a crossroads. Nations remembered the past, colonial rivalries, Cold War intrusions, U.S. interventions in Grenada and the Dominican Republic, and the long history of Caribbean territories serving as geopolitical chess squares. At the same time, they faced a future where climate vulnerability, migration pressures, and energy dependence created new forms of fragility. So when the carrier strike group appeared, the emotion felt across the islands was not fear, it was anxiety, rooted in memory and sharpened by modern uncertainty. Caribbean leaders knew the stakes. Great powers were moving again, and the sea was once more becoming a stage. Chapter 2, The Region Feels the Pressure. If Chapter 1 established the fact of the U.S. naval presence, Chapter 2 begins where the pressure becomes visible, not just on radar screens or maritime charts, but in the lived experiences, political calculations, and uneasy conversations taking place throughout the Caribbean. In this chapter, the region itself becomes the protagonist, caught between the weight of a superpower's projection and the instability of a continental neighbor in crisis. A fragmented region listening for signals. Long before official statements emerged, Caribbean societies were already absorbing the implications of the carrier's presence. The islands are small, but their awareness of international dynamics is acute. A shift in sea traffic, a rerouted flight path, a surge in U.S. diplomatic calls, these are signals that people do not ignore. As the carrier strike group continued operating near Venezuelan waters, localized anxiety grew. It wasn't panic, it was something subtler, an emotional tension rooted in the region's history of being overshadowed by larger conflicts. In Bridgetown, market vendors at Cheapside spoke about rumors spreading through WhatsApp groups. They say an aircraft carrier near Venezuela means war. Most didn't believe it, yet the message still changed the morning's mood. In Port of Spain, the 6 a.m. ferries felt unusually subdued. Passengers glanced at the headlines on their phones, U.S. Naval Group marks presence near Venezuela, and the heaviness of the moment settled into casual conversations. In Nassau, taxi drivers discussed whether tourism would slow if geopolitical risk increased, even slightly. They had lived through shocks before, a hurricane making landfall, a financial crisis, a pandemic. They understood how quickly global turbulence could interrupt their livelihood. Barbados watching with cautious realism. Barbados often sees itself as a diplomatic bridge, small but respected, cautious but principled. Its government responded to the buildup with a tone calibrated not to provoke either side. Behind closed doors, though, there was debate. Some advisors argued the U.S. presence was stabilizing, preventing Venezuela's instability from escalating further. Others feared that hosting any U.S. activities or appearing too aligned could place Barbados at the center of a geopolitical contest it had no desire to join. The country's fishing industry also began reporting tensions. Fishermen accustomed to navigating waters near Grenada or Trinidad now found themselves intercepted by patrol aircraft flying lower than usual. The aircraft weren't hostile, but their presence was unmistakable, watchful, deliberate, authoritative. In a region where fishing isn't just an economy, but a cultural identity, such changes hit deeper than simple inconvenience. Trinidad and Tobago, the country with the most to lose. No Caribbean nation feels the Venezuelan crisis more directly than Trinidad and Tobago. Separated from Venezuela by less than 10 miles at the closest point, Trinidad has always been part of Venezuela's immediate neighborhood, geographically, economically, and even culturally. When the carrier strike group appeared offshore, the mood in Port of Spain shifted instantly. Trinidad had long maintained a delicate diplomatic dance, welcoming Venezuelan migrants while managing domestic backlash, cooperating with U.S. security initiatives while preserving ties with Caracas, balancing energy sector interests that linked the country to both partners. Now, with a U.S. carrier group off the Venezuelan coast, Trinidad found itself standing on the edge of a widening geopolitical fault line. Officials worried about three things. Maritime spillover. Any escalation, even a misunderstanding, could push vessels or aircraft into Trinidadian waters. Migration surge. If Venezuelan fears spiked, thousands could attempt the short journey to Trinidad overnight. Energy infrastructure risk. Trinidad's offshore platforms sit close enough to Venezuelan waters that any military tension would raise insurance costs and disrupt production. Publicly, the government remained neutral. Privately, officials understood that Trinidad would be among the first to feel the consequences of miscalculation between Washington and Caracas. Jamaica, far away yet not far enough. Jamaica, located north of the Central Caribbean, is geographically removed from the Venezuelan theater, but politically and economically, it is part of the same system. The island is deeply integrated with U.S. financial flows, tourism demand, and security cooperation. Any disruption in U.S.-Venezuela relations reverberates through Kingston's foreign policy calculus. Jamaican analysts viewed the carrier's presence with intellectual clarity. "This is not about war," one Kingston scholar said. "This is about signaling, but signals can be misunderstood." Jamaica's greatest concern involved the broader U.S. posture. A more militarized Caribbean basin could shift Washington's expectations for regional cooperation. Countries might be pressured, directly or indirectly, to take clearer positions on Venezuela's legitimacy, its elections, or its territorial ambitions. Jamaica, which has historically guarded its independent decision-making, now felt the subtle weight of renewed American attention. The Bahamas, tourism meets geopolitics. The Bahamas, though distant from Venezuela, worried for a different reason: tourism. If global news outlets began portraying the Caribbean as a region with rising military tension, tourism bookings could falter. It only takes a whisper, one headline implying instability, for cruise lines or travelers to shift preferences. Furthermore, the Bahamas sits along major U.S. security routes. The increased movement of U.S. military aircraft between southern bases and Florida meant Bahamian airspace grew more congested. Voices: the imbalance becomes clear. Regional scholars emphasized a simple truth. The Caribbean is made of small states in an ocean dominated by large powers. A U.S. aircraft carrier is not something a Caribbean Navy can match, challenge, or influence. Most regional coast guards possess patrol boats, offshore cutters, small surveillance aircraft. None have destroyers or submarines. None have missile-equipped fleets. None have capabilities even remotely comparable to a carrier strike group. This imbalance creates a vulnerability, not a military one, but a political one. When great powers move, small states cannot counterbalance. They can only manage the situation diplomatically. Maritime zones under stress. Beyond politics, there were immediate, practical implications. Fishing grounds. Caribbean fishers operate in a tapestry of overlapping zones. When U.S. naval activity increases near those zones, fish migrate, patrol vessels change routes, and local fishers encounter unfamiliar obstacles. Shipping lanes. Some shipping lines rerouted around the southern Caribbean corridors, driving up cargo insurance premiums. Ports from Kingston to Georgetown began anticipating delays. Airspace control. Air traffic controllers noticed U.S. military aircraft entering shared commercial corridors. These aircraft generally filed collaborative flight plans, but their presence still forced adjustments. Venezuela's domestic narrative, reclaiming the stage. Inside Venezuela, the carrier's arrival became an immediate symbol within government-controlled media. Caracas framed the U.S. presence as an act of imperial intimidation, a violation of regional sovereignty, and a direct response to Venezuela's legitimate territorial claims. State television depicted the U.S. ships as intruders. Political rallies revived slogans proclaiming resistance to external intervention. This narrative served two purposes: mobilizing domestic support at a time when economic conditions and political legitimacy remained fragile, reframing the Guyana dispute as part of a broader struggle against foreign interference. People across the region understood these narratives well. Many Caribbean nations have lived under their shadow at one point or another. But the rhetoric added a new layer of uncertainty. If Venezuela used the U.S. carrier as a political tool, it could escalate tensions even without military action. Guyana, a small nation in the crosshairs of history. For Guyana, the situation was personal and immediate. Its border dispute with Venezuela, rooted in the 1899 arbitral award, had intensified after significant oil discoveries. The world's largest offshore oil find of the decade transformed Guyana from a quiet, overlooked nation into a strategic fulcrum. As Venezuela intensified its territorial claims, Guyana looked outward for support, and the United States answered. Behind closed doors, Guyanese officials experienced conflicting emotions: relief that a superpower was visibly defending their sovereignty, fear that such support could place them directly in the middle of a geopolitical storm. The U.S. carrier symbolized protection, but also danger. Guyana had never sought to be a military front line, but that is what territorial disputes often create. A region forced to balance. By mid-operation, Caribbean states faced a diplomatic matrix: support Guyana's sovereignty, maintain relations with Venezuela, uphold ties with the U.S., avoid being drawn into conflict. This balancing act became the central tension of the region's political landscape. Leaders issued statements that read like tightrope walks, carefully worded, cautious, neutral, but unmistakably aware of the stakes. The midpoint shift, two theaters of tension. By the midpoint of Southern Spear, analysts recognized a key development. The region now faced a dual theater tension. Theater 1, Venezuela's domestic instability, political polarization, contested elections, economic collapse, and aggressive territorial claims. Theater 2, regional balance of power, the U.S. naval buildup, intensified patrols, diplomatic attention, and security recalibrations. These two theaters overlapped, but were not identical. Venezuela's internal crisis created the trigger. The U.S. response created the new environment. The Caribbean floated between them, uncertain which direction the storm might travel. The human dimension. Beyond governments, everyday Caribbean people felt the strain. Students wondered if foreign scholarships or visas could be affected. Airline workers noticed more U.S. military personnel moving through airports. Cargo handlers at ports reported increased security inspections. Fishermen felt new anxiety navigating their traditional zones. Journalists prepared for sudden changes that could redefine the news cycle overnight. In the Caribbean, where cultures feel intimately connected across borders, the tension seemed to ripple through conversations, radio call-in shows, church gatherings, and weekend barbecues. Chapter 3, The Shape of the Future. By the time the U.S. carrier strike group settled into its operational rhythm, the entire Caribbean region found itself adjusting to a new psychological climate. The presence of a superpower's most formidable naval asset, so close, so potent, so unavoidable, forced every island, every capital, every maritime economy to confront a difficult truth. The geopolitical map of the hemisphere was shifting, and the Caribbean would not remain a passive backdrop. The region, historically shaped by the ambitions of outsiders, was again becoming the hinge on which larger powers moved. A region relearning old lessons. In ministries and strategic think tanks, analysts began dredging up histories that had shaped the Caribbean for centuries: naval blockades, gunboat diplomacy, Cold War posturing, and the seismic effects of the Cuban Revolution. Caribbean people have always lived at the crossroads of global interests, but the tone of the 21st century felt different, subtler, more complex, more intertwined with economics and energy. The arrival of the carrier signaled a return of hard power, but it also summoned the memory of older patterns. The Caribbean is no stranger to military projection, but in the present day, its vulnerability has new dimensions. Economic fragility, climate exposure, energy dependency, and logistical reliance on maritime stability. The region understood that these factors formed the true battlefield of modern geopolitics, even when no shots were fired. The new militarized hemisphere. Military cartographers and regional security advisors began drawing new versions of the hemisphere's strategic map. For decades, the Caribbean had been described as a low-intensity security zone, plagued by trafficking, illegal fishing, and piracy, but largely devoid of major state confrontation. That assumption no longer held. The new map featured three emerging realities: a hardened U.S. security arc stretching from Florida through Puerto Rico down to Curacao and Guyana, a Venezuelan military posture increasingly shaped by domestic political pressures and the need to project resistance against perceived U.S. encirclement, a Caribbean caught between them, possessing limited military capability but vast vulnerabilities tied to sea routes, tourism flows, and energy imports. This wasn't the Caribbean of the 1980s, when the U.S. invasion of Grenada asserted American dominance in the face of Cold War anxieties. Nor was it the Caribbean of the early 2000s, when the region carved out a relatively calm geopolitical identity centered on development and tourism. This was something new, a hemisphere in transition, defined by competing interests and fragile equilibria, the sovereignty dilemma. As Operation Southern Spear continued, diplomats across the region confronted a critical question. How does a small nation maintain sovereignty when great powers shift their weight across the region? Sovereignty, in the Caribbean sense, is not defined merely by borders or flags. It is defined by control over maritime zones, freedom to trade and travel, security of energy corridors, the ability to maintain stable diplomatic relations, the right to remain neutral. The U.S. presence tested these principles. So did Venezuela's aggressive territorial claims. Caribbean leaders recognized the difficulty. Neutrality in a polarized hemisphere becomes a precarious stance. The economic ripple. While politics dominated headlines, the most profound impact of the carrier's presence was economic. For many Caribbean nations, the sea is an economic lifeline. Tourism depends on perception, global investors follow risk assessments, and maritime shipping underpins daily life. Even without conflict, the region felt the ripple. Tourism boards quietly prepared contingency messaging. Central banks tracked fluctuations in oil prices triggered by geopolitical tensions. Shipping authorities engaged in emergency planning with major cargo lines. Fisheries suffered from relocated stocks as large vessels disrupted migratory paths. Port officials began implementing new scanning and compliance systems in anticipation of increased U.S. scrutiny. Then there were the intangible effects: shifts in sentiment, investor hesitation, travel anxiety. In the Caribbean, perception is often as valuable as reality. Guyana's future, a rising power in a dangerous neighborhood. Guyana, once a quiet nation overshadowed by its neighbors, now found itself at the center of a global triangle involving U.S. strategic interest, Venezuelan territorial ambition, and the commercial pull of ExxonMobil's offshore oil fields. The presence of the carrier effectively reinforced Guyana's sovereignty, but it also painted a target on the country's geopolitical profile. Guyana's challenge was unprecedented: how to grow into a rising petrostate while avoiding entanglement in a military rivalry it did not choose. Guyana's long-term strategy, debated in closed sessions, focused on diversifying alliances, strengthening the Coast Guard, establishing clearer maritime boundaries, building diplomatic ties with CARICOM to avoid isolation, quietly investing in early warning radar and surveillance systems. Guyana understood that prosperity without security is fragile. Venezuela's long game. Venezuela, cornered by economic collapse and political turmoil, viewed the carrier's presence through a lens of national survival. The government needed an external enemy to unify its base. U.S. naval power became that symbol. The long-term danger was not war, it was escalation through miscalculation. A rogue commander, an aggressive patrol aircraft, a disputed boundary line crossed at the wrong moment. History is filled with conflicts that started not from intent, but from error. And the Caribbean's geography, tight and crowded, makes error harder to contain. Quiet diplomacy behind closed doors. As tensions rose on the sea, diplomacy intensified behind the scenes. CARICOM foreign ministers held late-night consultations. They debated how to reaffirm support for Guyana, discourage Venezuelan escalation, maintain relations with the United States, avoid becoming pawns in a larger game. The region's diplomats understood a fundamental truth: Caribbean stability depends on managed relationships, not military strength. Some pushed for stronger statements, others insisted on neutrality. In the end, they settled on carefully crafted language, supportive of international law, yet hesitant to provoke. But the private conversations revealed deeper anxiety. We are small. We cannot shape the superpowers, only navigate them. Cultural memory and survival. Caribbean societies have long memories. They remember the plantation era. They remember imperial competition. They remember the Cold War. They remember offshore crises reshaping local life. Thus, when the carrier appeared offshore, Caribbean people interpreted it through a cultural lens built over centuries. The sea as protector, the sea as threat, the sea as conduit for external influence. Caribbean identity survives because it adapts. And now the region began adapting again. The emerging strategies. Caribbean states began developing future-facing approaches to navigate the new geopolitical climate. One, non-alignment 2.0. Not the old Cold War non-alignment, but a modern adaptation. Maintain economic ties with all major players. Avoid military entanglements. Resist pressure to take sides. Preserve independent foreign policy. This strategy requires finesse, but Caribbean nations have practiced balancing diverse powers. Too quiet regional cooperation. Small states survive by working together. Maritime surveillance networks expanded. Intelligence sharing deepened. Joint Coast Guard patrols increased. These were not acts of militarization. They were acts of resilience. 3. Strengthening multilateral shields. Caribbean diplomats leaned harder on the United Nations, the International Court of Justice, the Organization of American States, the Commonwealth. These institutions serve as buffers against unilateral pressure. For investing in maritime security, nations like Antigua, Dominica, St. Lucia, and Grenada sought upgraded radar systems, faster patrol vessels, regional early warning cooperation. This wasn't preparation for battle. It was preparation for uncertainty, the emotional landscape. While officials mapped strategy, ordinary Caribbean people experienced the situation as a rising emotional tide. The tension wasn't overwhelming, but it was persistent, like a hum in the background of daily life. Parents wondered if shipping delays would raise food prices. Entrepreneurs feared disruptions in tourism. Migrant communities worried about instability spreading from Venezuela. Fishermen hesitated to enter zones rumored to be near naval operations. The region didn't feel panic, but it felt watchfulness. The aftermath, a region changed. By the time the U.S. carrier began repositioning at the end of its operational cycle, the Caribbean had already transformed. The vessel had not fired a missile nor launched a single combat sortie. Yet its presence altered diplomatic relationships, economic forecasting, security planning, and public consciousness. The tension it carried became the tension of the region. Synthesis, what it all means. The U.S. naval buildup did not create new problems, it amplified existing ones. Venezuela's instability, Guyana's rapid rise, regional economic fragility, maritime vulnerability, dependency on external powers. What it revealed was a larger truth. The Caribbean, though made of small states, sits at the center of hemispheric forces far bigger than itself. Its future will depend not on military might, but on diplomacy, unity, and strategic foresight. Final reflection. As the carrier drifted slowly westward on its return route, its wake rippled across the sea. The islands, quiet, proud, vulnerable, resilient, watched it go, knowing that the future it symbolized was still unfolding. In the Caribbean, the water remembers everything. And this moment, this rising tide of tension, will be remembered too.